In a recent conference, the speaker said, God delights in learning. And I love this. And it got me thinking that this is a lifelong stance and will involve the ongoing rhythm of both learning and unlearning. And what struck me about Amanda is her desire to be so open to this. And she describes one experience that was so powerful that it felt like a holy encounter to encourage her to move out of something and into something new. So we invite you to enter in and listen to her story. Just want to welcome Amanda. And it's a little different today because I have her sitting in my dining room. And it's really lovely to be able to do this face-to-face and not do it on Zoom.
Yeah.
And so welcome. And I'm really looking forward to hearing your story and what your lived experience, how that has shaped you and shaped the way that you think and the way that you see things.
Thank you. So thank welcome. You for having me. Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about Amanda and what makes you you.
Right. I'm in my early 50s. This year, I will have been married to Bruce for 33 years. I just turned 20 when we got married, grew up in that purity culture. And so it was the thing to do, thankfully, by the grace of God, it was also the right person for me. So I grew up in a church environment and cultural environment where women weren't allowed to be in leadership. I grew up firstly in the Anglican Church, Navigators, Open Brethren, and those three streams really affected how I saw myself and how I experienced God.
Yes.
In our mid-20s, we decided that we'd go to Bible College, which is now Laidlaw, with the idea that my husband Bruce would do a degree in ministry and become a pastor. And within that time at Laidlaw, I began to have this wrestling match with God about second-class citizenship. And really, I was finding my voice, and I plunged myself into the deep end by enrolling myself in the two-year program for speaking. As I'm like, you know, I want to find out. I need to figure this out. And so in that process, I was having this wrestling match with God. And the main question that I had with God is, if you have second-class citizens in your family, I'm not sure I really want to be part of your family.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, how does that even work? And so we, you know, there was a lot of tears on my part. And eventually I came to a point where I heard God very clearly say, it's taken you long enough. And I just, you know, just the wham of that going, I actually don't need to hold on to this anymore, that I'm not a second class citizen. Fast track there, we've got three kids all in their 20s now. So we had kids at Bible College, which is always a fascinating way to grow up. When I was in my 40s, a role came up at one of our local churches that we were attending, a Baptist church, for a role for the young adults pastor, and it was a joint role. So I applied, and not thinking I would get it, but I did. And the realization that I was actually stepping into this space where everything triggered my second class citizen upbringing. I think I probably spent the first 6 weeks driving to work in tears and just going,
wow,
God, what are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing? Why am I here? Yeah. Should I be here? I feel so unworthy. I surely can't be enough. And I ended up staying in that role with the young adults for 5 years. We had a series called Relationships, and much to the credit of the senior pastor, over this, I think it was a 10-week series, one of the weeks was on homosexuality. And because I was leading the young adults service in the evening, my message would be what the young adults would hear. So I had 3 weeks to prepare. And the more I read, the more I realized I have absolutely no idea even where to find the verses, what the verses say, what the context is behind them, what the wider view of these verses are. And we were sitting around the dinner table as a pastoral team, and I had what I can only describe as a holy encounter. And it still sits with me because, you know, I can feel my voice starting to constrict, and I can feel my eyes welling up because it was a holy encounter.
Mm.
And sitting around this table, I just started to cry.
Mm.
And all I could say is, what if we've got this wrong as well?
Wow.
And from that moment, God would not let me go.
Yes.
And I'm a straight, white, middle-aged person. I don't have anyone gay in my family that I'm aware of. I have no skin in the game.
Mm.
And I actually believe this is part of the reason why God called me to do the work that I was about to step into. So I had that holy encounter. And then I had the realization that I didn't know what the Bible really was saying.
Yeah.
And then the third thing that I also realized is I didn't know how to stop regurgitating the same rhetoric that I'd been taught.
Yeah.
Where do I go? Who's safe? Who's credible? Who should I stay away from? Am I even allowed to read outside my confirmation bias? Because it felt so unfaithful.
Mm.
But I also knew that learning that I wasn't a second-class citizen in the family of God also felt unfaithful.
Wow. Can I just pick up on that word? Because I think that's a really powerful thing, this idea of being unfaithful.
Yeah.
And that it's unfaithful to question something that has been handed down for so long. And that's a really isolating, a difficult place to be in.
Yeah.
And so I think to even be able to recognize that and name that is really healthy. It's a it's a good place to begin because it's not that it's unfaithful, but it really feels it.
It feels it. Because you're reading outside of your confirmation bias. It's messy.
Yeah.
It's deeply uncomfortable. And yet when you have the type of holy encounter that I believe that I had, there was always this continued sense that God was calling me out of something and into something new.
Mm.
And I just had to hold on to that. And there were times where when I was doing my master's and my thesis was listening to LGBT narratives, where I had to just go, God, I feel so unfaithful.
Mm.
What is this? It feels so against the grain.
Yes.
You are going to have to bring someone across my path in the next 24 hours or I'm out of here. Like I need to know. And every time I said that prayer, I would get a text or a phone call or a book would be recommended to me. And I'd go, oh, there you are, God. There you are. It's okay.
Yeah.
I'll keep following. I'll keep doing the work. I'll keep doing the mahi. And it's okay to feel uncomfortable.
You've really named another thing that Stephen and I have talked a lot about is this feeling of, if you think you're the only one, if you think that you're odd, it is too difficult to go from that position.
Yeah.
Again, not only is it isolating, but to feel that odd is psychologically untenable.
Yes.
And so it's really good, again, hearing that and also hearing you go, God, if you're calling me to this, I cannot do this alone. And so Stephen and I are often saying, well, let's be odd together.
Yeah.
Because if there's just a few of you that can reinforce it, well, we can make our own little support group. That oddness we can hold and not see it as a bad thing because it's only in that something new can happen.
Absolutely.
If we can, but as I said, we cannot do it by ourselves. And so I love that you cried out, God, give me some people to sit with me in this space to keep you going.
Yeah. I used to joke with my young adult community when we were tackling really tough topics and always encouraged the young adult group to tackle the tough stuff. I would always say to them, listen, I'm about to put on my brave underpants and we're going to tackle something. And it's it's going to feel icky. And there is no apology for feeling uncomfortable when you step into the messy, because that's actually where transformation happens.
I don't know about you, Stephen, but as I'm listening to this, it just feels so real. Like I feel myself going, yes.
Yeah,
I want to go into that space because that feels like you've just said the most authentic space to have the things that we really long for, which is change and transformation. And it doesn't happen in any other space. Mm. It's in those ones.
Mm.
And yet one of the things that I've read that you've said, Amanda, is that church can become the riskiest place to be spiritually honest. So those brave underpants, that's stepping into that. Could you unpack that a little bit, perhaps your experience or what you've observed?
Yeah, sure. So from that moment, that sort of holy encounter moment, and knowing that God wasn't going to let me go, I spent a lot of time searching resources. And I know that my language also changed while I was being a pastor. My language turned more towards, I believe God is calling me to keep the doors open, rather than when all God's people are in God's church, we're going to shut the doors and feel safe. And I remember saying this on one Sunday morning, I believe God is calling me to keep the church doors open.
Wow.
I ended up leaving that role about a year to 18 months after. And I left in a very broken place. Mm. My heart was broken. Theologically, I was broken. I was undoing all of this stuff that I had automatically regurgitated. So by the time I left that role, I wasn't in a well place. And I cried probably every day for 6 months. And it wasn't medically termed as a breakdown, but I know it was a breakdown. I was broken.
Yeah.
And I lost my whole community through that.
Yes.
So that was a very difficult time. Yeah. I had 6 months sort of crying and licking my wounds, I suppose, and ended up going to our son and his wife's church, which was a vineyard church. And I did a lot of healing there. I couldn't get through the second line of the first song without floods of tears. And, you know, I would drive home and I'd just be like, God, I love you, but I don't like your people. Like, I feel so hurt.
Mm.
And it took quite a lot of time within that particular community for me to find some healing and some strength.
Yeah.
But now that I have done 5 years of research beyond my master's thesis, I'm now back at a position, and at no fault of the church that we're at, but I'm now back at a position where I really want to be part of inclusive community. I actually want to be taught and ministered to by LGBT Christians, that I want to learn what their relationship with God is like so that mine can be richer. And I see that as acts of justice, where I want to move myself towards the other.
Mm.
And I want to be shown mercy as well as give mercy, because, you know, when you come to face to face with LGBT Christians who have been hurt by the church, it's actually us that need the mercy. You know, we need to apologize, and we need to want to learn how to do it better. And I also want to be in a position of humility where I am learning from them.
Yes.
So I'm now in a position where I need to decide what that looks like going forward.
You've mentioned your thesis a couple of times for those who perhaps aren't familiar with that work. What was your thesis on, and perhaps what did you learn through that process?
So I did a narrative methodology, and that's where you interview people and their stories become the authority of your thesis. You have to do a literature review, and you have to do methodology chapters and all those sorts of things, all those nerdy things that I love, but I often say skip chapter 3 and 4 because it will send you to sleep. So part of the interview process was the 7 people I interviewed, they all had to have grown up within a Christian faith community. They all had to have remembered the moment that they realized that they weren't heterosexual in their desire or orientation or identity, they had to have a coming out story that was at least a year old for their own safety. Mm. So listening to the reason they came out was really important. The fourth part was, what were people's responses? And then the fifth part, the final question was, so what does your faith look like now?
Wow.
And that, even through the interviews, there were times where I had to stop my interviewees and go, okay, my head is spinning. The terminology you've just used, could you please just walk alongside me to help me understand what that means, so that I can do justice to what you're telling me? So, you know, even through that, I'm unlearning and relearning and being challenged and feeling comfortable and feeling unfaithful and all the time aware that God is going, come on, come on, this is okay, keep going, keep going. Yeah, so the thesis was these seven beautiful LBG Christians that generously shared their stories with me, and I'm still friends with. And what I learned out of their stories, what I learned out of the literature review, what I learned out of delving into a theological and interpretive framework that is inclusive and has a much better outcome and faith outcome for people, and not just for LGBTQA plus Christians, but for the church. For all of us. So, you know, it was the catalyst to the website Already Enough. So Already Enough went live yesterday. And on Already Enough, it's a research clearinghouse where there is nothing on there that will add to the exclusive, you can't be gay and Christian narrative. Because if you want to find information on that, just go to your church library, go to your theological libraries, because it's there. So what Already Enough is doing is providing credible resources from theologians, from biblical scholars, from lived reality stories of people, from stories from parents whose kids have come out and have done this journey, stories from church leaders that have had to change their theology, have had to go through that unfaithful process and come out on the other side and go, man, God is incredible and God is inclusive.
Yes.
And there's so much more and so much bigger and wider and deeper to our faith. So all of that's in there. There's also a page on how to be an ally. There's the reminder that the A in the LGBTQA plus doesn't mean ally. A lot of people think, oh, we're included. Actually, as an ally, I'm not part of the rainbow community. I am a supporter of them, and I stand in the corner should they require me to do so. Yeah, so that's the thesis, and that's the webpage that I've started. I'm also, you know, I've had 15 years experience of public speaking. I'm going to make myself available to come in and walk alongside elderships and boards and try to, and you know, to hold that tension for people. Like, I often describe the work that I'm doing as I'm actually the ground crew of the airport. So you have a choice. You have your hangar, which is your safe place where the doors are shut. So my invitation is, come out of your hangar, get onto the tarmac, get onto the runway, and I will give you a flight plan to help you get off the ground so that you can see from a different perspective what God is doing. But where you land is between you and God.
Yes.
But for flip's sake, do the work, right? So that's my thing. Where you land is not my responsibility, but I will hold these tensions for you. I will explain to you what the traditionist framework says, what the revisionist framework says, what the no man's land in the middle also says or doesn't say, because they don't say anything. which theologians and biblical scholars on both aspects of those frameworks are worth listening to, and where does that leave us? Mm. Yeah.
And, you know, when I think about my own journey, you simply don't know what you don't know.
No.
And even though at a gut level we were talking about this, you know, I felt in my spirit that we've got it wrong, like what you said.
Yeah.
But where do I go?
Yeah.
And how do I get more informed? And so I've just had a brief look at your website and went, oh, thank goodness. So as people are listening, you know, it's a place they can go just to go a bit further on that journey, like you said, to get out on that tarmac. Mm-hmm. And so I just really appreciate having that, because you simply do not know where to go.
No.
And where are the good resources? And then I want to pick up a word you said previously, because I think this is really helpful, that as we do this, you called it the work of justice.
Mm.
And to do this work of justice, moving myself towards the other means I am going to feel all of those uncomfortable feelings. I am going to feel the sense of feeling I'm doing something unfaithful to the traditions. But I think that's really helpful, that that is the work of justice. Gives a great framework with when, okay, that is going to be part of it.
Yeah.
And not to be shocked by it.
And it's okay at times to go, actually, I need to catch my breath, because the discomfort and the messiness can sometimes feel incredibly overwhelming. And I'm also training to be a spiritual director, and one of the things that we are taught is to hold space so that we can catch our breath, so that we can sit in the stillness, and we can listen to what the Holy Spirit is whispering inside us. So you talk about, you know, that gut reaction.
Yes.
You know, when I have that gut reaction, for me, I recognize it as a spiritual discernment that inside me, the Spirit is stirring and going, are you sure?
Mm.
Are you sure? I've been watching Byron Katie, the work. So she asks questions to help people untangle the prejudices or the traditions or the rhetoric or the regurgitation that they have held onto. And the first question she asks is it true? And you go, oh, yes, I'm sure it is. And she'll turn back to you and she'll go, is it really true?
Hmm.
And you go, oh, actually, no.
Hmm.
And she helps you untangle all of that, which is part of, you know, the aeroplane analogy, where you get a new perspective.
Yes.
And one of the things is, you very well may not land where you started off from.
So you have to let go of even the thought of where the destination is going to be. And we talk about just trusting the process. I don't know where it's going to take me, but I have begun it.
Yeah.
And so you're saying to, not have any idea where this will land.
And isn't that faith?
Yeah.
You know, isn't that what we're supposed to be doing? We're supposed to be dismantling our theology and our traditions that we think are certain and stepping into this area of faith and unknowing and doubt and mystery and all these things that just God is.
Mm.
And those are those moments that are so precious, when you realize the penny has dropped, that something holy has taken place.
Mm-hmm.
I remember listening to a sermon by Nadia Boltz-Weber about the mustard seed. And I had only ever heard that sermon from the perspective of, you don't even have enough faith of a mustard seed to move that mountain. It was always from a place of deficiency, where when Nadia spoke, she spoke, you have the faith of a mustard seed. Now, what mountain do you need to move?
Oh.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
And those are those holy moments where you just go, flippin' heck, why is it taking me into my 40s to hear this?
That's a great question. Do you have any thoughts reflecting on that, about why is that?
Yeah, I think for my generation and the generation before me, we have definitely been taught that we should not question.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That we don't ask questions, that whatever is taught from the front, that is gospel. That is it. Yes. where the next generation coming through, you know, my kids and the kids younger than them, they are very good at critiquing. They are taught to question.
Yes.
And I see the young adults that I was ministering to, and they were ministering back to me, was this, you know, we call it deconstruction or disorder or whatever label you want to put on it. And now we are recognizing that we now need to move back into a reorder, into a relearning. And what I'm trying to do, so one of the pages on the website is called Already Shifting, and that's all about letting go of our certainty and moving into that area of faith where we trust not just our gut instinct, but trust that the Holy Spirit is leading us. And into what area, we don't know.
You know, we have been, as a community that I'm involved in, looking at, you know, deconstruction and reorientating or reconstruction. But we also added a couple of extra words to it that I think might be helpful. We added expansion so that we could expand and then from expansion go to diversity.
Yeah.
And that's what that says to me, is that it's for that purpose of that kind of expansion.
Yeah. It is. It's so much like, I mean, I just love the story in Acts about Peter and Cornelius, you know, and people go, oh, that's the old story. It's always brought out for the argument or the LGBT inclusion. Well, actually, yes, it is.
Yes, that's right.
Because it is about calling what we have thought and been taught as unclean as clean.
Oh, absolutely.
And the thing I love about that story, that even as Peter was on the roof having this dream and this vision of what was once unclean is now clean, God is already at work in Cornelius' house. Mm. God's already present in the LGBT lives and is leading them to teach us. Mm. You know, it took a lot of courage for Peter to turn up at Cornelius' house, to step over his doorway, to have a meal, to stay the night. All of those things are unfaithful.
Absolutely.
Completely, utterly unfaithful things for Peter to do.
So against everything that was ingrained. And I was even listening to another podcast about even his taste buds, eating different food.
Yeah.
It's just so foreign. You know, so yes, you're right. He's challenging everything that felt faithful.
And he got in trouble for it, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. You know, Paul and Peter go to the Council of Jerusalem and they try to convince. And it's not an instantaneous thing. It's an ongoing conversation that the Gentiles should be included. And this is part of the ongoing conversation around who we also include. And I'll tell you a little story. One of my interviewees came to the church that I was at, and we were about to have communion. Now, I know that he was stood down from his role in worship at his previous church because he was having same-sex attraction feelings. He wasn't in a relationship, but he confided in one of the pastors and was stood down. Mm. So he came along to the church that I was at, and we were about to have communion, and we have four stations around the auditorium. And I always like to sit back. I always just like to take my time, sit back, watch other people and just go, oh, this is great. And as I was coming up to the table, I looked around and I saw him at one of the other tables. Mm. And I had this overwhelming realization that the only reason I'm allowed to have communion is because he's allowed to have communion.
Wow.
Wow.
And it's just, and those moments just make my heart sing and make the tears flood, right? Because it's like, it's so important that I can also be included.
Yes.
Just as much.
It feels like love though, doesn't it?
Oh,
Isn't that what it's meant to be? That's what it feels like.
Yeah, yeah. And seeing somebody.
And that's why you experience it as that.
Seeing someone face to face is the same as seeing God face to face. One of the prayers that I often start my day with is, God, where are you? Where do you want me involved? Do you want me involved? Is always a really good question. And then the other part is, let me see you in the people around me.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can do that, if I can start my day knowing that I am going to see God in every face that I come across, then you cannot deny the diversity and inclusion of God, because God is in all that God creates.
People might quite like us again. Well, you were talking about like, oh God, I don't like your people.
Yeah.
But that would change your whole stance. It changes your whole way of being. Asking those questions.
Yeah, let me see you in the people that I see today.
You see people with dignity, and then that changes the way you interact, because that dignity then is the thing that is driving you.
Yeah, yeah. The Imago Dei, seeing God and God's creation.
One of the things that we're trying to consider with this podcast is, I guess it's naming some of the key blockers that are in the church at the moment to whatever the changes ahead might be. Are there really obvious barriers that you would see that will be helpful for us to name before we perhaps think about what some of the steps are ahead beyond those to a more inclusive church?
I'm a big fan of Peter Enns and his book, The Sin of Certainty, I think is something that every church leader should be reading.
Yes.
There is so much mystery about God that to even contemplate that we can be certain of who God loves and who God does not love is not just ignorance, it's blatant arrogance. And I know that sounds incredibly harsh, but when I hear comments like, we know we're hurting people, but we, you know, this is what we think we should, I'm like, there is nothing loving about that comment.
No.
That is just a comment that comes from ignorance, has moved to pride, and has now moved to arrogance. So this whole idea that we can even be certain of even the movements of the Holy Spirit, that the Holy Spirit is always moving, God is always expanding, that even if we thought we were certain 1 minute, God has expanded again in the next. To have that idea that we will never understand how high and how deep and how wide God is should move us to want to figure out what we don't know.
Yes.
Right? So around this particular space of diverse sexuality, of LGBT, of queer, of rainbow community, all I can do is say from my own learning is as I read into those particular scriptures that had taught me that this particular group of people were excluded from God's community, the more I read, the more I understood how misunderstood those scriptures are, that the context behind them has nothing to do with what we think it has to do with.
Yes.
The other thing that I've learned is people will always disagree on these particular, what's called clobber verses.
Yes.
But if you're only ever reading from one interpretive framework and you're not even willing to flirt with the other framework, then you will remain stuck. You will remain stuck. You know, you're talking about change ahead. The church has had to change direction on so many issues over time.
Yes.
And often the church has been the last to do so and has caused the most harm in dragging their heels. Again, back to Phyllis Tickle with the Great Emergence. She talks about all the things that the church has had to change their mind on and continues to do so. And I believe that LGBT faith space is another one of those areas where if your church and your church leaders and your elders don't do the necessary work to read outside their confirmation bias, to feel uncomfortable, to do the journey of possibly feeling unfaithful, then the church will either double down on what they think is certain or the church will split. I also want to say that the church splitting is not always a bad thing, that actually split is growth. Sometimes things need to die and some things need to be birthed. And my prayer is not that the church will split, but if they have to, that they will do so with grace
and humility.
That if we can't come to a point where we can all worship together, and it's not just worship, it's also about being led by the other, loving the other as we love ourselves, putting them in a position of teaching and being on staff. And I know that is probably blowing some people's minds right now, but yeah, it's, I think that's where we're going.
And I just want to affirm that I've always believed at the core of Jesus's message is the embrace of the other.
Absolutely.
Central, you know, God embracing us. And so that is the challenge for us to have that humility. And I think too, I liked what you said earlier, is to admit that we most likely will have things wrong.
Yes, absolutely.
And I'm reminded of the disciples who were upfront and personal and saw Jesus and still got most of it wrong.
Yeah.
So why would I think that I'm going to get it all right?
Yeah.
I will get it wrong.
Yeah.
And if I'm going to err on one side, I think I want to err on the side of grace.
Absolutely. I mean, imagine at the end, when we come face to face with God, God leans forward and goes, "You were a little bit too compassionate." And like I said, you know, this sort of area of discussion and debate involves people's lived realities.
Yes.
And we may never come to an agreement. And I might be wrong. At the end of the day, I might be wrong. But I've been willing to put more than 5 years of research and listening and prayer and 5 years of not getting paid. Like, this is my alabaster jar that is breaking open. This is my gift, my sacrifice. And I also know that just like the alabaster jar that was poured out, it may be misinterpreted. It may be pointed at and gone, "What is she doing? She shouldn't be here. She doesn't belong. Who does she think she is?" But it's my sacrifice, and I know that God sees it.
As we come to the end of our time together, Amanda, what would you say is something that the listeners could do straight away in their faith communities that is going to help progress us along this journey?
I want to stress that it takes time. It takes time to unlearn, and that's the icky part.
Yes.
It takes time to go, "Oh, I think I might have been wrong." And then it takes time to relearn. So for church leaders and for elderships, I just want to encourage you to get hold of some good, credible resources. And they are on the site. My go-to book is always James Brownson's book, which is Bible, Gender, Sexuality. He does a beautiful job of holding those hermeneutical frameworks alongside each other, highlighting what's great and also highlighting what's not so great about those two frameworks. So at the very least, pick up a good resource that you will go through with your eldership. And then you're going to have to be willing to bring this to your community. And this is always the danger, right? Because knowing that your livelihood depends on the goodwill and finances of your community that agrees with you, when you suddenly have a holy moment and you have to go through that process of feeling unfaithful and messy and unlearning and relearning and discovering what the holy invitation is. Oh, that's, you know, people have done it and people have also lost their roles. And I don't want to gloss anything, because whenever you are coming out about your theology, there will be a cost. But the cost of not coming out about your theology and staying silent when you should know better, that is something that I pray weighs heavy, that I pray is more uncomfortable.
You have put out there the invitation about coming to speak, because I was thinking, if there are groups of people listening, go, that would be really helpful to come and have you speak to us, because like once you've done some reading, you've been on this journey 5 years, and like you said, it's a long process. Mm. So to have someone just come and bring that is so helpful.
I don't see why we should have to reinvent the wheel every time, right? And yes, on my webpage, alreadyenough.co.nz, there is a page where you can contact me to book me and to come and talk to your eldership. And even it might just be for me to come in and tell you my story of how uncomfortable it was, that feeling unfaithful is actually an act of faith. And then to recommend some reading resources and for me to come back in 6 months' time and then have another discussion, see where people are at, and take it from there. But it has to filter down from your eldership. And I think this is also why we are losing so many of our young people from churches, is because the eldership and the leadership are not doing the work. So, you know, we have young people going, what's the deal with this LGBT exclusion thing? We've got friends that are gay and we love them and we sure as heck wouldn't bring them to our church. I think that is one of the ingredients that is adding to the loss of our young people within our church. They're just seeing through us. And I also want to, you know, acknowledge that church leaders, it feels really, I mean, I talk about messy and uncomfortable, but when you do this part of the journey where you're actually looking at the context behind these clobber verses, what they mean, there will be moments of shame and there will be moments of, oh, I didn't even know there was another way to read this.
Oh, yes.
And I just want to commend, you know, church leaders for the work that they do. It's a tough job. It's a tough job to bring ourselves every week before our congregation and be vulnerable and be messy and holy and everything that we are. And yeah, so I just want church leaders to know that they can come to the website Already Enough and they are safe. There is information there for them, that it is a space for them also.
Yes.
Yeah.
You mentioned the cost, or the possible cost for church leaders, and I hold that, but I also think, well, what's the cost to these people?
Yes, absolutely.
Who are being excluded, who are feeling that God doesn't love them or couldn't love them. And I think that actually that cost is much greater for our siblings who are created in the image of God.
And the church also, you know, we're growing up all the time, right? So I think it's an act of maturity and grace and trust and faith to have the courage to put on your brave underpants, whatever size they need to be. And just start reading and educating.
Get on to the tarmac and take off. Well, as we finish this time together,
could I maybe do a catechia?
Awesome.
Holy wisdom, God of grace and mercy and justice, wipe the dirt from our eyes and from our ears, embolden our hearts. Help us to listen to that gut discernment. Help us to ask the questions. Encourage us to feel unfaithful as we step into faith and not certainty. Lord, show us who you are in the other. May we know that everything that you have made in us and the person beside us and the very person that we are trying to keep out of our church is you. That you and the other is what we need. Thank you that you move and you stir and you invite and you mess things up. And thank you also that you bring us back together, that you heal, that you mature us, that you help us to grow. And in all of those processes, we learn who you are. Thank you that we are invited into your presence, that our humanity is our blessing, and help us to live that well in you. Amen.
I just wanted to thank you as we're finishing up, just for the language that you've given us, for the way that you have been really honest and helping us see the process, that it's no easy process.
No.
And you've been really honest. And I think that is so helpful as we begin this, for wherever anybody is in this journey. And so I just wanted to thank you so much for this conversation. It has been, I just want to say, soul enriching.
thank you. My pleasure.